ExchangeWise ATS Singapore returns to the Sands Exhibition Centre on July 3rd. Grab your tickets now to secure your place. You'll hear the latest on retail media, live commerce and the impact of AI on the industry, plus much, much more. Join your peers in an outstanding lineup of speakers as we shed light on the challenges and innovations in media marketing and commerce.
The MarTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the ExchangeWire MarTech Podcast. I'm your host this week, Anne-Marie Sheedy, CRO at ExchangeWire, and I am delighted to be joined by Katrina Smart, Commerce Media Director Europe at the Mars Agency. Hello, Katrina.
Hi, nice to be here.
Great to have you. And also, pleased to be joined by none other than the research lead here at ExchangeWire, Matt Broughton. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Anne-Marie. Delighted to be here as well.
It's great. The sun's out.
I know.
For once, this is it. Finally. Enjoy the 3 days of summer. Okay, I'm going to kick off with our first story, which comes from Bloomberg. And they have reported that Amazon's live streaming site, Twitch, launched its own short-form video platform a week after passage of a law that threatens the future of TikTok in the US. If you're not overly familiar with Twitch, creators on the platform typically live stream themselves playing video games or chatting with audiences. And the new service called Discovery Feed appears as a new tab on Twitch's mobile app and allows viewers to scroll through short clips taken from those longer videos. According to a Twitch spokesperson, streamers will not receive a cut of the ad revenue that appears on Discovery Feed because the ads appear between their clips and not directly in them. Quite interesting, I thought. So, Katrina, I'm going to come to you first on this one. Do we think Twitch could one day become a serious rival to TikTok? What are your thoughts?
Well, a few years ago, we didn't think that Amazon would be able to rival Netflix, and look at them now in terms of their Prime offering. So I'd say, never say never with that. They could definitely rival TikTok. TikTok gained popularity really quickly in terms of the audiences they have and how engaged they were. And Twitch seems to have a very engaged niche audience as well. So it feels like this new discovery feed takes the best bits of these kind of like 8-10 hour gaming marathons that people are watching and does that quick highlight that TikTok users love. So yeah, there's a definite possibility there.
And in your experience, you know, how leaned in are brands on Twitch versus maybe TikTok? Do you see any kind of preferences? I appreciate it might depend on the audience and what they're trying, or the brand, the messaging, but anything that you can share on that?
I think it just really depends on the brand and who they're trying to reach. The gaming audience is so niche, but can really, really engaged. I imagine for like brands like Monster and Red Bull and Coke and those types of brands, they're like the perfect audience there for gamers who confect brands and things like that who are sitting there for hours on end playing a particular game. So I feel like there's definitely opportunity there for them.
Yeah. Matt, what are your thoughts? I always kind of put you on the spot as a resident gamer in the company.
Yeah, so I think it's an incredibly shrewd move by Twitch to roll out short form video. Obviously, it's the in vogue media format, and it can really, as Katrina said, break down those longer gaming videos into really digestible snippets. Do I think it can rival TikTok? I don't think so, because I think TikTok, it's kind of more like the everything platform. And I think with the US ban, I think Instagram is a little better placed to be able to fill that gap. But yeah, it's still an incredibly shrewd move. And obviously Twitch at the moment is going through a bit of a pivot. Obviously last year, their CEO departed. They also lost a load of other C-suite executives, like their chief customer officer, chief product officer, chief content officer, which could represent that they're going through more of a kind of whole-scale pivot. And they did some wider layoffs as well, which is obviously not unique to the tech landscape. With a kind of more cynical hat on, I would suggest that they're more looking to, Amazon has never necessarily made it profitable. So I think they may be looking maybe to divest it to private equity, and just having short form video platform in that kind of sales brochure makes it a little more appealing than unprofitable video game streaming service.
But do you think, I mean, are they just kind of copying each other and trying to get one up? Or what is the real opportunity that perhaps brands should be looking for on these platforms? Or maybe looking at it the other way, what should they be mindful of? You mentioned, you know, niche brands potentially, or don't interrupt the gaming experience. But where do you feel it kind of sits on the planning process? Is it, you know, we need to put some money on there, do you think? Is there test budgets maybe going there just to see? What would you going to say?
Yeah, I think in terms of it's quite brand specific. I think with gaming audiences, it's been a bit more challenging for a lot of brands to, you know, engage with those audiences, unless they're the likes of the Monster Energy, Red Bulls. I know a few automotive companies have found success with it. It depends on which audience you're trying to reach. And obviously Twitch has made steps in the last few years to broaden its audiences with the more kind of IRL, you know, in the life of streams. Mm. But if you go onto their homepage now, it's still very gaming specific. So I think if obviously you're looking to reach those audiences in your media mix, definitely it should be involved in, you know, discussions there. But otherwise, yeah, it's a little too niche, I'd say, at the moment.
Because it kind of feeds into our next story to a degree. You know, this is the one that it was featured in the FT, and they were talking about how Roblox announced video ads. And that would become available to all advertisers. They're saying it's going to allow them to kind of seamlessly reach Roblox community of users. And that user profile is around ages 13 and up. This is coming from, I'm not on Roblox. This is, you know, I'm taking this from this story. And according to the article, this new immersive advertising format doesn't require creation of custom-built 3D content, and it opens up a scalable opportunity for brands to connect with Gen Z consumers that they say represents over half of the platform's 71.5 million daily active users. There are some phenomenal figures there for a world that I've got. My nieces and nephews are on there. But what I'm really trying to understand here, and Matt, I'm going to continue on your train of thought here, if that's okay. You know, what should advertisers keep in mind when trying to kind of navigate these advertising formats?
Yeah, I'd definitely say take an experimental approach. I think shoehorning in any old ad from your YouTube campaign or even TV campaign, I don't think that's likely to be appealing to Roblox users. And I think from the examples that have been provided, at least in terms of the press releases, I'm not on Roblox either. I'm a bald 30-year-old man. I don't think it would be appropriate for me to be wandering around on Roblox necessarily. But I think it's probably best to look at it more like a digital out-of-home campaign, judging by how those, you know, in-platform experiences have been labeled, at least in terms of the video ad side of things. And from the initial brand lift studies, I think early adopters are going to, you know, they're going to see the advantage there. Because I think depending on how widespread these placements become, I think especially that younger Gen Z audience, which may be a bit more skeptical of ads, banner blindness could come into play there. And obviously, it is still a static video placement within an otherwise 3D immersive platform, which, you know, can be a challenging thing to pull off. But at the end of the day, like you said, Amory, it's such a scaled younger audience. I think definitely to advertisers, I'd just say give it a go and see if it comes off.
Katrina, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's crazy. It's Roblox, and I'm not a Roblox user either. But it reminds me of like The Sims from back in. But in terms of the video ads, it essentially is like an immersive version of a 48 sheet or a digital home billboard campaign, digital out of home billboard campaign. I think it's interesting. I do think Roblox is all about how you can create fun, engaging content, really push the boundaries. And their previous offerings are really custom. So this feels very different. And I do wonder just how, you know, the fact it doesn't require that custom setup, how impactful is it going to be to a Roblox user in that experience, which is extremely immersive, versus something that's completely custom and built for them, like the Walmart experiences or things like that, where you can have avatars and you, when you buy the product through Roblox. You get it like next day from Walmart, and then you have the product there straight away in your Roblox character. So I wonder how it's going to stack up versus some of the other kind of really custom engaged campaigns that you can create.
That's a really interesting point, because it's about the relevance, right? Contextually, it's got to be relevant. Interactively, visually, the rewards element. There's probably other integrations that are out there. And I think from experience of looking into this, you know, you talk about virtual billboards within a racing game can display real world brand logos, kind of creating that more natural connection. And that's when it's done well, it can be really great. But I think, you know, these younger audiences, they're more engaged with gaming content. And when they're immersed in a game, they're likely to pay attention to all of it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they figured out. This is just another element that they feel that they can have that impact. But any thoughts around what it looks like when it comes to kind of maybe the measurement element? Is that going to be different? How are they going to help brands understand that part?
They've just mentioned that within that article as well, that they're looking at the completed views as part of their upcoming reporting metrics. So I think it's currently in beta, but I guess that's really interesting for a brand, is understanding how engaged someone was with the advert. So I guess with that, you could look at some really interesting tests in terms of what creative has been working, who, like your number of completed views versus those that haven't, and do some kind of creative testing there to understand. But it's interesting that they're looking to include that as part of the offering.
How, I mean, Matt, you might be able to lean in here a bit more, but when it comes to measurement, I'm a bit of a cynic. It's all nonsense to a degree. It's just it can be made up. How are they going to verify it? What does this measurement mean? How does it align with, what are they measuring it against, and how are they comparing it?
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, within the Roblox platform, well, within sort of gaming platforms, when it is that immersive 3D world, they will probably have a lot more inherent data about where the user is looking in terms of where the viewpoint data. And I think the reason they're going for that, you know, completed views, they're going for those attention metrics, because obviously I think it's something that's going to pan out well for them in terms of, you know, that campaign reporting, because within immersive environments, within gaming, attention is generally very, very high compared to some other formats. I definitely think I don't necessarily know how they're going to track it. But I think, you know, in terms of those engagement metrics, I can understand why they're leaning towards them, because I predict they're going to be very, very strong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose there's an element of the simplicity and scalability that's appealing, right? That's the draw. Brands can easily kind of use this video ad format in their campaigns. It's got a format that seems to be designed for the kind of more digital savvy consumer out there, because this is their natural environment. They're a lot younger. They don't know any different. You know, I'm not going to show my age and talk about what had an impact at me at that time, but it seems to be, they obviously have done their research and they kind of figured that this format is particularly effective for reaching Gen Z audiences, because they're challenging to reach through the more traditional and 2D media, shall we say.
Yeah, exactly. And they've, you know, got a wide range of brands involved in the beta tests, and they seem, at least in terms of the press releases, very on board and engaged with the results they've had so far. It'll be interesting to revisit this one in a few months' time and see what impact it's had for brands, and, you know, whether those attention metrics that they've been receiving through the platform have been particularly compelling or not, as it may be.
Yeah, I'm really interested as well in the terms of the different types of brands that have been advertising in Roblox.
Yes.
Because it's, you know, when you look at it, that they've done work with Gucci, with Aloe Yoga. They obviously do a lot with Walmart. You know, they're really luxury premium brands that have created these immersive experiences. And obviously the age range, you know, the age range of users varies, you know, 13 upwards. But it's crazy in terms of what you're able to, you know, the types of brands that have been able to advertise on that platform. I think it's just opened up a whole new world of opportunities for more premium luxury brands that might not have, you know, invested in some of these kind of things before.
Is that because the kind of expanded controls and features that are included in here allow them to be perhaps the brand suitability? Is it a safer environment, do we think? Or is it because they can, the detail they can delve into, like genre targeting, et cetera, makes it an easier buy and worth, if I'm Gucci, I feel comfortable investing in this because I know I'm going to hit the right people. I've got the right detail and it's an environment whereby I can perhaps have this aspirational sell to them. And maybe they're at home and they, you know, I don't know, the disposable income of a 13-year-old buying Gucci products. Wow.
Yeah, there must be. To get them there, get them while they're young in terms of that loyalty scale.
The suitability, the environment, the types of brands, I think we'll all agree it's not for everyone, but I think it's becoming more appealing and it's making it easier. And that's the point. They know what they're doing. They're allowing all sorts of brands to kind of have that opportunity to come in and test and then be able to give them decent metrics to justify that spend.
Yeah, I think a lot of these brands have all must have, you know, big pots of innovation that they've been reserving for different kinds of things like this. And Roblox has obviously offered them the chance to be as creative as they've always wanted to be. So the what they've been able to create, the experiences have been completely different for each brand. So I think that's where they've been focused on.
Matt, any particular ads that are served at you that jump out as absolutely awful, wrong environment, got it wrong, or well done, they nailed it?
Not necessarily, because I think the kind of games that I play, they're those kind of more, you know, RPGs, the more immersive long form games that ads just wouldn't necessarily be appropriate in. But say if I play, you know, the likes of Rocket League or F1, you know, the F1 series of games, and they have those more, you know, traditional sports style ads within those.
Yeah.
That's completely fine with the experience. Obviously, yeah. I don't necessarily play too much mobile games, but that's obviously a bit more ad heavy because it's that, you know, shorter, more digestible format that obviously if you're having a game in between levels or specifically rewarded ads, gamers do engage a lot more with those on mobile because they see more of that value exchange. But obviously, if you've paid, you know, £50-60 for a long form, you know, immersive role-playing game, you're going to be a bit annoyed if an ad pops up right in the middle of that.
Yeah, I can't imagine if you were playing COD that you'd be
exactly
getting served an advert. But I imagine if you were playing something much more relaxed, that, you know, depending on the environment, it would work. My husband's a big gamer, so we have a lot of games in this house.
Oh, well, you know, maybe I could look forward to seeing your husband or Matt on Twitch. I can see you recording yourselves chatting. I read a stat that some people up to 8 hours or something. There are people talking through their game, talking to audiences. Oh, I can't talk. I just lose my life to Netflix at times, I suppose, and maybe watch rather than playing games. But anyway, who cares about that? I'm going to move us on to our third story, which it kind of leads in. We're talking about environments. This is talking, it's taken from Marketing Week, and the title is Global Social Media Ad Spend to Approach £200 billion in 2024. So according to Warc Media, social media is the largest media channel worldwide by advertising investment, with Meta alone representing a 63% share of global social spend. It goes on to say that social media has cemented its spot as the largest media channel worldwide. And having overtaken paid search last year, social media is forecast to total $247.3 billion or £198.1 billion. That's in 2024. It's up 14.3% year on year. Meta alone is on track to surpass linear TV in global ad revenue by 2025. Some stats from the UK, it says social media ad spend grew 15.6% year on year in 2023 and is forecast to reach £8.8 billion £1 billion in 2025. And that's per the latest AA Work Expenditure Report. They say much of this growth is attributed to rising spend on social video formats, which were up 20% on last year, according to IAB UK. Now, there's some interesting stats there. I suppose really what I would like us to discuss and debate is, how does this spending ratio impact the advertising ecosystem? Simple question for you there, Katrina.
Really simple after all those stats.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think that from, you know, the fact that we're seeing social continue to grow is healthy. It means that, you know, we are still very digital savvy. People are still consuming more and more digital media, specifically, obviously, social. It's definitely impacting the ecosystem, and it has done for the past few years. You know, it's rivaling linear TV now. The fact it's going to surpass linear TV next year is crazy. I mean, who would have thought that 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, linear TV was it. So I think that in terms of, yeah, how it impacts that, you know, advertisers are just having to rethink and to make sure that they're spending in the right channels. But yeah, it's crazy that it's still at this kind of huge growth, especially with Meta owning, you know, 60% of that.
Criminal, some might say. But we won't go into that. That's a different podcast. Matt.
Yeah, so I think it's reflective of the time spent on social platforms. And as well, I think inherently humans are social creatures. So, you know, either engaging with friends or, you know, joining online communities within social platforms is where people will naturally go to. And I think the recognition of the importance of social media has been held by marketers for a good long while now. So I think it's more of a gradual shift in spending ratios rather than, oh my God, dramatically it's gone up to obviously, you know, that 60% Meta figure. It's huge, but I think it's more of a gradual shift. One of the graphs within the report showing the, you know, spike of social since 2022 when it was below paid search, I think it's likely due to Meta's pickup of the short form video within Instagram. And also I think possibly there's an element of Google dropping the ball in terms of paid search. Why would particularly a smaller advertiser pay Google a lot of money in terms of their overall marketing budget to appear fifth, sixth, seventh on the search page when they can, you know, buy an ad on Facebook or Instagram, which is on a more prominent part of the page. I think marketers also do, you know, they still recognize the importance of premium publishers and linear TV as an example. There's a reason why Super Bowl ads go for millions and millions of pounds at a pop. But yeah, it's obviously reflective of, in terms of that overall spending ratio, people are on social. Why would marketers not spend their budget there?
That's true. I mean, okay, Meta's got a remarkable influence, but it does go, social media's kind of stronghold on budgets extends beyond Meta, right? We've talked about TikTok, Snapchat and Pinterest have experienced a return to double-digit ad revenue growth. Twitter is expected to see further decline in its business. So I'm curious to know, you know, the dominance of social media presents both opportunities and challenges. You've got rising ad loads and the impact of AI on media planning are areas that advertisers kind of need to navigate a bit more closely. So would we say advertisers are wise to spend most of their ad budgets on social media platforms? What do we think? Katrina, have you got any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I guess it's depending on the results that the advertiser is seeing. I do think that obviously they're going to, a big proportion of their budget will be spent on social media. But there's still the need to have a true mix. And they might be moving some of their linear TV budgets into social or into more connected TV or BVOD channels. We saw the same with like paid search on Google moving into like retail media spend. So I think that they just have to really think about the mix of channels that they're looking at. But social will definitely take up a big proportion of the budget for sure.
And we'd think that's down to perhaps the detailed analytics that social media platforms provide. Is that something that, Matt, do you think is high on the agenda, or is it equally balanced in terms of the advantages around the visual and creative formats that you can have, or the engagement element, or the targeting precision and the audience reach? I would imagine that these are kind of all advantages of social media spending, but then are there any kind of considerations around the challenges that are in these environments that people need to be thinking about?
Yeah, obviously, I think, you know, with the likes of the third-party cookie being deprecated, obviously Privacy Sandbox, at some point is going to roll out both on display and mobile. So I think obviously those metrics are going to be important, but I think the key for social will always come down to that reach. People will be on social platforms. Obviously, we've seen the engagement on those platforms go up and up and up. But I agree 100% with Katrina that the diversification of the media mix is still going to be so important. So it shouldn't be a case of throw all your eggs into the social basket. Yeah. And I think obviously one of the discussions that's been taking place in the industry over the past few years is, you know, that kind of brand safety discussion around news publishers. And I think, you know, obviously if you're trying to attract a more premium audience, and say you're selling software as an example, what's going to be, you know, more engaging to your audience? Is it going to be an ad placed to a political story in The Independent, or is it going to be your neighbour Janice talking about her disastrous trip to the garden centre? It's still going to be, you know, those premium publishers still have a massive, massive role to play. And I do think in terms of, you know, that brand safety issue around news publishing, that is definitely something that still needs to be addressed.
Right. So if I'm correct, then I think you're both saying that it's about balancing the mix. So we're looking at a holistic approach. Advertisers should adopt that holistic approach. Social media complements other channels, the TV, the search, the display, etc., because each channel serves a different purpose. And then It comes down to the audience behavior, whether it's Janet or Giles. And you consider where the target audience is spending their time. For younger demographics, social media is a no-brainer. It's pretty crucial. That's where the kids are at. But maybe for B2B, depending on the brand, LinkedIn might be more effective. And then I guess it comes down to the kind of the testing and the optimization and the budget allocation, because people need to diversify their budgets, right? It's essential that social media is there. But mitigating, diversifying budgets mitigates risk in principle, taking into the suitability, the safety, the privacy, and the behavior. Is that what we're looking at here? Is there anything else that kind of jumps out, or you kind of feel if you're having conversations that brands need to be taking, you know, what the landscape looks like, how can they evolve? Maybe, I suppose, Katrina, is what I would put to you, which is a tough question, you know, get your crystal ball out. Where's the next step? How, as the landscape continues to evolve, is there anything else that brands need to be kind of trying to consider to get this balance between effective advertising and maintaining a positive user experience within these platforms?
Yeah, it's a really fine line for brands to be able to manage both. I think with social in particular, the reason why social's been so popular is, aside from the fact that obviously everyone is spending so much time on social and consuming so much media through it, it's been so popular because you've been able to get measurement that you previously haven't been able to, and really get to that audience level data and engagement and understanding who it is that you're reaching. You know, the fact that you can segment all your audiences and reach particular people with certain creative, you haven't been able to on linear TV. So I think that's one of the things, but there's definitely a fine line between, you know, how you're reaching your customer, and, you know, where you're driving to, what that call to action is, and so on. So I feel like a lot of that lies within your creative, making sure that each channel that you're advertising on is speaking to that right customer. So it's all about, yeah, right customer, right time, right place.
Yep. Matt, is there anything you can add, even, you know, with a maybe more of a global lens as well, from various research projects that you've been looking at in different markets, when we talk about social versus surpassing linear TV?
Yeah, I think it just comes down to the point of what is your goal as an advertiser? Where, you know, what audience are you trying to reach? you know, how are you trying to reach them? What price point are you trying to reach them at? And obviously social, it has been very cost effective compared to those more premium environments, which, you know, for a smaller independent advertiser, yes, you can 100% see the appeal. And even for the larger advertisers to help broaden the reach of your campaign, it's still an impressively powerful tool. But yeah, I think it again comes back to that diversification of the media mix. And I think one thing as well to be cautious of in the approaching years, obviously we've seen generative AI reach massive interest at the moment, and there is a risk that it could distort the overall social experience if, obviously, you know, each and every page you come across on social platforms, if it's generated AI, it's not going to be as high quality as, you know, proper, you know, curated user-generated content. So I would say that's one thing to be cautious of going forward, and I think that's obviously something social platforms will be very wary of, and they'll obviously have stricter controls in the coming months and years to make sure that those communities, which obviously is so important for social platforms, that they're actually, you know, made by people, inhabited by people, and therefore you're going to get that level of engagement which the users want, and obviously the advertisers want as well.
You've left us there. We're running out of time, and that is really quite scary. And real that I think is
I like putting the frighteners on people just to end a lovely Friday that morning podcast.
But how are you going to be? The pace at which AI is evolving and what we can do is frightening. I mean, it's got huge benefits, but how are you going to be able to define what's real and what's not, and what is genuine user content or generated content versus AI generated, because it's so smart? I think it's going to be hard to decipher, but we will have to dig into that on another occasion, because sadly we're out of time. But I would just like to thank you, Katrina, for taking the time to join us. It was a really interesting chat, and thank you, Matt, as well, for your contribution as always. That's it for this week's MadTech Podcasts.